we also like to isolate people that are too frightening for us. And that is the other side of it. And again, the Israeli sensation seeking, we see that in adolescence especially, that the children who are most exposed, when the shootings on Gilo were going on, we heard about adolescents calling each other, "They are shooting, let's go and look." And there is this process of addiction to alertness, addiction to adrenaline. And everyone who's been in Israel knows it's adrenaline there, and people are looking for it. And you look at the Knesset, and people are picking fights and are really trying to get into it. I never understood that. My sister was living there many years ago, before I lived there, and well, it's fitting for her personality, but leaving that apart, she always would say, you know, "Oh, I had a fight today, it was wonderful." And I didn't understand. I mean, I'm a Dutchman, you know. but I'm starting to understand. It's really an outlet. It's not really helpful for the general atmosphere, but there is this thing. And risk-taking behavior, especially in adolescents and in post-traumatic adolescents, then you see that they go into all kinds of dangerous behavior. And that is where we are trying to really get a... That's risk-taking behavior. We try to really prevent these kind of things. And then there is the estrangement between victims and non-victims, which is a two-way process, and people are blaming each other very often for it. Society very often creates a special status for victims. We've seen that for veterans, we've seen that for many, we've seen that for bereaved parents of the army in Israel. They got a very special status, and what has starting to happen, and I hope that we can stop that, is that victims of terrorism will get a special status and special services. Well, they need services, but they don't need a special status because we want them to come out of this identity and become normal citizens again with horrible memories, but that are part of everyone. So society has this tendency to put people aside, and the victims then say, "No one understands me," and there's this need for recognition that people have. So there is this, it works together. Society wants them apart, and people need, for the first few months, they often need to be apart to realize what has happened to them. If you don't intervene, then what you will get is a new status, a new group of people in Israel that is separate from normal society. Okay, I'll go over this. And then the dysregulation, long-term, because we've been living for 5 years under continuous threat, and you don't know what will happen next. And although it's been quieter now, everyone knows that this is, it seems temporary. I mean, my other son, who was not in disengagement, is in a intelligence unit. Well, as a parent, I can tell you, you don't want a child in an intelligence unit because they exactly hear what's going on and where the Qassam rockets are. And they're not only in Gaza. And we know that. So what do you do with that? Nothing. You can laugh about it. You can be afraid, but you can't be afraid all the time. So you just keep it in you somewhere. But the consequences is that it's that you dysregulate, and that anger comes out in all kinds of ways, and that people on the one hand are exhausted, on the other hand they remain hyper alert and hyperactive, and that is the hyperactive society that Israel is. And memory really changes. When there were daily bombings, then sometimes it would happen that 10 days, 2 weeks, there was nothing. And people would actually say to each other, and I had to say, "When was the last time that something happened?" "Months ago." And, you know, it's really very strange how that works. So, where did this lead us, and that's I think the exciting part, because it is an opportunity, and that is my way of coping. All of this is an opportunity to learn, how do you keep people together? How do you create resilience and strengthen it? And how don't you let this go? Because we know what will happen. People will feel very close in the beginning, and it will turn against us. Society will fragment. And you see that also. You see the signs of that in Israel, in the political system, in how people relate to each other. So what we've tried to do, and actually I think is very successful, is create a trauma coalition. After 9/11, but also anywhere where... Oh, this is good. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm hyper alert. What we've decided to do is there's so much need, and when something happens, then immediately people run in, and after 2 days or 2 weeks, they run out again, because volunteerism and immediate response, you can't keep it up because you have your normal work. So the question is, how do you create a system in society that can really keep up the work? And our solution has been to create collaboration. I know it's not a Jewish concept, but it is. Well, it is it might not be a really human concept, because it's very, very hard. Different NGOs, non-governmental organizations, non-for-profits, that decide to divide up the work, and if something happens in Tel Aviv, we as Jerusalemites are not going there, because there is an agency in Tel Aviv that does wonderful work, and when something happens in Jerusalem, they don't come, and we're not fighting over it, so that what happened 4 years ago, and that is something happened and everyone would run in, now means that something happens and we call each other and asking, who does what? Do you need our help? Don't you need help? And our main focus has started to be training local providers in the system, not the non-for-profits, but the people who are there. And the Hadera bombing was the best example of it, which was 2 weeks ago, and we called in to see what is happening, and everyone had done his work, all the people in the coalition. They called in to the people there, train us, how are you doing? And they said, we're managing. You taught us what to do, and we're doing it. And we know where you are. If we need you, we'll call you. Which was really very, very good. It's not everywhere. Hadera was a place where we really focused on. But it's really wonderful. Basically, it is what we call a third generation of trauma services, because the first generation was basically goes back 100 years to trauma creates pathology, so we need treatment. And for many years, people said, oh, trauma, then you need a psychologist, which we know is nonsense, because as we sit here, every person here in this hall went through some traumatic events, and did you go to a psychologist for it? Some did. Most didn't. And normal coping is, of course, very important. But this was the first generation. And then in the 60s, there was the second wave of learning, people saying, okay, how can we prevent later pathology? And then we started to do prevention programs for everyone who went through something. And it's basically a public health model saying, let's look at 100% of the people who went through something, intervene and see if that brings down the number of people that need long-term services. And the third generation is basically integrating it and creating what we call a continuum of services, where you look at before the event and the event and immediately after and long-term after and see who needs what. For example, we know by now that the immediate care afterwards doesn't need to be, from a mental health perspective, for everyone. Because these interventions, like debriefing for whoever knows it, are not really bringing down the number of people that suffer long term. And so you can really change the model and get to a evidence-based model for mapping out what the needs are, what existing services are, and where do they need us. And that is where a lot of agencies are now working together. And this is just to confuse you. That's the systems that we're trying to build in the educational system, training, mental health, and school system. And it's all the different parts of things that we're trying to do. The main services then are building resilience, which is from a professional perspective, if there are psychologists, psychiatrists, mental health people here, that is the next phase that we need to understand. What is resilience? Because it's a nice word, but we don't know. And who needs and what are the best immediate interventions and detection and treatment and training? These are the things then that we're doing. So we need to open our minds to broader concept, not only pathology. We have to know that there are tendencies of society that counteract planning. We, as Israelis, but also charities, think short term. And that is a severe problem. Also in our funding, one of the main problems is that there are less bombings. So a lot of our supporters say, probably you don't need us anymore. Now it's different. And for the long term and integration of these services, we will need a lot of help over the coming years. Understanding, and this is not only for us then, and utilizing the human need to help in the face of trauma can really enhance. It's really powerful. The best way to heal is help someone else. And how do you create a system where people get that? How do you, and we have a lot of programs for parents that then can see what's happening with their children. And it helps them cope because now they have a role. And long-term planning and inter-agency collaboration, nice words, are tremendously important and helpful both for the agencies and for the field. And this is basically what our dream is, and that is to keep trauma on the Israeli agenda, because it has been on it and off it and on it and off it, and only in 1987 the first service for Holocaust survivors was created in Israel. 1987. And there's still a lot of neglect in the field, and we cannot cover everything, but we can initiate and get people and train people and help the system cope with that. And I hope that also you can help us do that. We have a website also, which is traumaweb.org, which at this moment is in Hebrew and English. It will be also in Arabic and in Russian in the coming 2 months, where there's a lot of information. It's a part of what our mission is, to get the information out there. And basically, the main thing is to realize that trees in the winter, they look dead. They really look dead. But we know, and that is so important to understand, that there is something after the winter, and that we really have to build on that and understand what that is. And so with that, I would like to finish my presentation and see if there are questions.
Window into the view of people's feelings in Israel at the moment and this kind of simile. But we have to end in 2 minutes, so we probably have...
That's four questions.
Room for four.
And will you choose?
So horrible to have this bomb that, you know, I mean, all the teachers,
So, Kitty, you're making the statement that what was so impressive is the training that everybody in the school had in order to help everybody. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Well, yeah, your question is there a difference between religious and non-religious people in coping with trauma in Israeli society? And I also hoped that. I had that hope, because that is one way of coping. As I consider myself a religious person, I hope that religious people would cope easier. As far as I know the literature, and there's some research about it, there's no difference. There's no difference.
One more question.
Speak all together.
The question is, what makes some people better coping, have better coping skills than others?
Okay, well, it's the million-dollar question. There's one thing we know by now, and that is personality of people, or everything we know to measure around personality, has no or hardly any relationship to later outcome after trauma. We don't know how to predict, although psychologists very often say, well, I know, understand now why this person had problems, because previously he had all kinds of things. No, we don't know how to predict it. There are some predictors, and that is people who've been traumatized before. The more trauma you go through, the more you are at risk. The more psychopathology there is in your background, the more difficult it'll be. The closer you were to the most horrible things, the more risk there is for later problems. But to really know which person will have difficulties in coping, we know very little about it. We know it about 2 or 3 days after the event. Then we can know.
And I just wanted to make a plug for the Israeli Center for the Treatment of Psychotrauma. We are having our gala concert November the 24th. Jan is there. Call Canadian Friends of Herzog Hospital for tickets. Thank you.